We're back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Royal Watcher podcast after a gap of almost 2 years at this point. I'm Saad Salman. I'm the founder editor of the Royal Watcher, a royal commentator, and a royal contributor for Elle.com. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest who is going to be our new co-host. Sam, over to you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sam Gillespie, and I run a blog called Beaumont. I have a background in fine jewelry and a long-held fascination with royalty and everything historical. So I hope that I can share my knowledge with everyone here.
Perfect. We're so glad to have you on. So every week, we're going to try to bring you an overview of the latest royal news and then focus on a particular topic. In the next few days, season 5 of Netflix's The Crown will be releasing, which has had all kind of varied reception over the past few weeks. And I think both of us are really excited to kind of share what our thoughts are.
Yes, I can't wait. As I said, have a background in fine jewelry, and one of my favorite things in the world is a tiara. And the jewelry replicas are looking amazing this season. Last two seasons, they've been a little bit hit and miss, as I'm sure you would agree, Sad.
Oh, yeah. I think there's been some references to real stuff. I think in the first season, we got like a look at the Lover's Knot tiara, but that was just horribly made. And the kind of placement of it was not historic. And then the second season, we got a look at the Vladimir tiara with the Cambridge emeralds. And that was actually not that badly done. But since then, the last two seasons, I think we got the Spencer tiara last season. That was kind of the only one. The rest were just awful.
We did, but even the Spencer tiara was about 10 times bigger than it needed to be. But, you know, It did the job.
To be fair, I mean, we both saw the Spencer tiara in real life earlier this year, and I thought it was much bigger than it looks like in pictures on Diana, especially.
I mean, compared to the Westminster tiara that both let us down considerably, yeah, it was sort of a decent sized tiara.
Oh, yeah, I think that exhibition is another thing we'll be talking about soon. But going back to The Crown, like you were saying that this season, the replicas, I think the sapphire tiara has been one that I really like seeing. And I don't know about you, but I've been seeing a theme in all the promotional images. If you've seen the documentary from the 1992 documentary, Elizabeth R, that has kind of the year in the life of the royal family, I feel they're really bringing in elements of that into this season of The Crown.
I think I know of it. I can't say that I've seen it all the way through. But yeah, as you say, they have been paying better attention to the replicas. I'm very I've seen some of the trailers, and we're going to get the Queen Alexandra's Kokoshnik. For people who don't know, that's a diamond fringe tiara. We're going to get the Cambridge Lover's Knot tiara on Diana, even though I think she's wearing it in a strange way, but that could be the shot, the angle that they're shooting it. But you know, I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too. Yeah, I think whatever kind of the storyline is, at least the jewels and stuff, I think will be quite nice. So I think before we get into other stuff, let's kind of do a bit of a recap of the last 2 years and just kind of catch up on where the big events that have happened since our last episode. So in last year, kind of the big event was the death of the Duke of Edinburgh at the age of 99, just 6 weeks before his 100th birthday. And afterwards, even though it was quite strict lockdown restrictions, 30 members of the royal family came together at Windsor Castle to have a really kind of moving funeral.
Yes, as you say, it was very sad because as much as he might not have been the most politically correct individual, he did spend, you know, 50 plus years supporting the monarchy and supporting various charities such as the WWF. And he created the Duke of Edinburgh Awards, and he really was sort of a rock for Her Majesty. So it was a very, very sad, very moving funeral, I must say.
Yeah, I remember watching it kind of in the middle of the night. It was a particularly busy day for me because I was giving a lot of interviews, but there were parts of it which I really had to kind of sit down, and I felt, even watching it on the screen very far away, like I could feel pretty moved, and I didn't expect that in when I started watching it, that I would be this touched by it.
Yeah, as you say, I think the especially the image of the Queen sitting alone, that was very poignant. You know, mask on, 95 years of age. It had to sit alone at her husband's funeral. I mean, they were married for what was it, like 50, 60 years?
75 this month, actually.
Well,
So 74 years almost.
yeah, so incredibly moving, incredibly touching, and the end of an era almost. It was
Very much.
almost sort of but then, you know, the final curtain was with the death of the Queen this September.
Yes. So I think like there was kind of from the Duke of Edinburgh's death, the Queen kind of came back to royal duties in the summer. We had the G7 summit, I think, in Cornwall, which was kind of her big return. And then through the summer until October, when the Queen did way too many public duties. I think she opened Parliament in London, in Edinburgh, in Wales. And then they announced that she was going to be having some mobility issues and she was going to take a rest. And that was basically the general theme from then on until the Queen's passing.
Well, she was, I
What?
mean, she was 96, you know, so the fact that she could do
Definitely, yeah.
any of that was, you know,
Extraordinary.
exactly extraordinary.
And then we saw with the Queen in February, she celebrated a huge milestone, becoming the first British monarch to celebrate a platinum jubilee. And there were celebrations for that in June, which really were like the last hurrah for long reign.
Yeah, and I must say, I was working near Buckingham Palace at the time, and after a while, it was just like, ah, oh, because it was a lot of the roads were closed off. It was, you know, traffic was terrible, trying to get deliveries to the office. But it was a once in a lifetime event, and it must have taken so much planning, you know, so much coordination on this, you know, from the royal household, from the military, from the police. But yeah, it was definitely, you know, it was very historic. And I don't, you know, I wonder if we'll ever see anything similar going forward.
Yeah, it was certainly kind of a very historic occasion. I chose that the Platinum Jubilee to be the kind of destination for my first visit to London. And the most disappointing thing for me was that I was not able to really see even Buckingham Palace so close up because it was surrounded by all those stands that were erected. But
Yes.
the mood in the crowd and everything, I think it was so joyful. And even though the Queen was, I think she was in total for public around like less than half an hour. She appeared in public during the whole weekend. There was the sense of this is not just the country, but the entire world honoring her kind of life and legacy.
Definitely, definitely. You could see from, you know, the size of the crowds, from, you know, the enthusiasm for the events, the street parties that took place up and down the country. There was definitely a mood of celebration.
Definitely. And that I think was leads us into kind of talking about the Queen's death. Like
Yes.
my first visit to London was for her Jubilee. And then it led into my next visit came right when she passed away. Like we both planned to go to Buckingham Palace on the 8th of September to see the exhibition. And
Yes.
you unfortunately weren't able to make it, but I decided to go ahead with our original plan. And right as I walked in, it appeared that the Queen was quite gravely ill. I could not believe it for most of the time, but then as I was going through all the exhibition rooms and the state rooms, it appeared that no, this was really just the final time. So it was quite a moving experience for me being inside the palace while the Queen was passing away.
Yeah, it was, I mean, a very, you know, historically important event. She was the longest reigning monarch, and her reign spanned, you know, a complete transformation of British society. I mean, can you imagine what life was like in 1926 when she was born? And she died in 2022. So she saw the whole, you know, as I say, the whole of British society completely change around her.
Yes.
And she represented a lot. For some people, and she represented a certain way of life that, you know, a lot of people are nostalgic for. People remember her service during World War II, and she did become an icon for a certain generation of people. And I do think that her death, in some ways, marks the death of a certain kind of Britain.
I totally agree. I think she was just a symbol of a world, and it was extraordinary that she had been kind of head of state for so long. I remember thinking for the past a few months at least, that whenever I saw something like, oh, this happened 70 years ago, and the queen was kind of presiding over it, made me think how long, like, her life and her reign spanned this huge kind of turning point in history, and she has been kind of there for all of it. So it was very poignant that she was really honored in this way.
Yes, and I mean, you know, one just has to look at the crowds that came to pay their respects and the queues that were forming to visit her coffin as she lay in state. You know, I know a lot of, we don't really want to be disrespectful in this podcast, and a lot of people did make disparaging remarks about Her Majesty and about the Institute of Monarchy. But I think just judging from the reactions, the, as I say, the queues, the lengths of the queues, you know, people sleeping overnight to pay their respects, I think that really was the true mood of the country. That's what that exactly. Showed.
Yeah, like I was in the crowd on the day that the Queen was being transported from Buckingham Palace to Westminster Hall for the lying in state. And I remember talking to people in the crowd there who had never thought of themselves as royalists or even wanted to kind of come and stand in the crowds for like hours on end waiting to see a coffin. But they really felt that it was an important thing for them to do, and they wanted this to be kind of honoring the Queen and also honoring kind of the Britain that she represented.
Yeah, definitely. And as I say, with her passing, it does, you know, as someone who lives in Britain, it does feel like the, you know, we're on the verge of the, well, we are in the Carolingian age, but it will be interesting to see what that represents.
Yeah, like I kind of see it in a sense that when the Queen came to the throne in 1952, like the Britain and the world was recovering from the Second World War, and it was already a very chaotic situation. And it's kind of an interesting parallel to this situation where people are coming out of COVID, and then the economic recession is kind of heading our way. So it's a similar situation at the start of this new reign as well.
Well, you know, as they said in 1953, let's hope it brings some magic in, brightens up our days, because we could definitely use it.
Definitely, I agree. So the funeral itself was really one of the largest gatherings of heads of state in history. We saw a kind of royalty from around the world heading into London, along with heads of state, presidents. For me, I am friends with some of like the royals that were invited, and on like their personal accounts on social media, I was able to see kind of a perspective into the buses that the heads of state were being transported in. And it was so kind of unique for me to see kind of all these kings and queens and the emperor of Japan sitting side by side in one row.
Yeah, I remember, and wasn't there some controversy about that?
Definitely. I think there are a few kind of heads of state, the Americans and a couple of others who decided not to sit in the buses. But I found it really kind of democratizing that all these like kings and queens and emperor, like they were all in buses, and they thought the most normal thing ever.
Yeah, they were the ones not making the fuss, and everyone thought, you know, it was in, oh, the British are being rude. And it's like, they're not being rude. Like, London is jam-packed. Where do you think you're going to park all of these limousines?
Yeah, that would have been like, we know the spaces around kind of Westminster Abbey. There's not that much space, especially when it's like full of crowds. Yeah, so that kind of transitions us into, the Queen was not the only monarch to celebrate a jubilee this year. That honor also went to Queen Margrethe II of Denmark, who was celebrating her golden jubilee, 50 years on the throne, with celebrations originally planned for January. But due to the COVID situation, they got delayed to September. And by another kind of tragedy, September came around and the Queen passed away 2 days before the start of the celebrations. So some of them had to be delayed, some were canceled. But I was very lucky enough that I was got media accreditation, and I got to go to Denmark to cover Queen Margrethe's Golden Jubilee Gala, and also saw the royals arrive for the banquet the next day.
And I was so proud of you, but so very, very jealous, because you got to see all of my favorite jewelry up close.
Being worn. And I honestly could not believe, like, in a sense, like I was seeing all of this like for free, in a sense. Like, it's one thing to see jewelry and like and pictures or an exhibition, but to see them being worn at a gala like this, like that was just an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, that's one of the things I do like about the Scandinavian monarchies. I mean, you know, they are obviously historically very different to the British, and we, you know, we do have the problems of you know, optics and PR in this country, but they do love a gala and they do love to wear all their jewels for said gala, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and one thing that was even more extraordinary for me was not only did I see kind of the Danish royal family and the Swedish and the Norwegians and the Greeks, but the Danish aristocracy were also invited to this gala, and they passed by right in front of me. So all these like ladies in old family heirlooms, tiaras, huge emeralds, big necklaces. And that was a lot more kind of interesting for me, where they wanted to involve the aristocracy in this event and have kind of them represented as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that I know much about the Danish aristocracy. I mean, I don't know if it's not that the British aristocracy is particularly big, but that might be something we could go into, the different aristocratic systems all over the world.
And a good big shout out to my friend Casper, who not only was able to kind of ID a lot of the aristocrats, but also took me and a couple of friends on a tour of all the royal palaces around Copenhagen. I think we saw 7 in total the following day. And that was really just a surreal experience to have someone who was so knowledgeable about everything guiding us along. And I think that he's been on the podcast before, and I'm pretty sure we'd love to have him on again.
Oh, definitely. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so also on the subject of the Danish royal family, there's been some controversy since the Jubilee, because Queen Margrethe has removed the princely titles from her 4 younger grandchildren. And that, I believe, is kind of indicative of a trend that's starting in a lot of royal families, as Queen Margrethe wrote in her statement, in that they are downsizing the kind of core monarchy and they're doing it with titles.
Yeah, no, that was very, it was a very interesting development. I think the Swedish royal family did something similar a few years ago, where the titles were taken away from the younger members. But yeah, as you say, it's a very interesting development. We could actually do a whole episode on the issue.
Definitely.
But it's interesting.
The trend kind of started with the Dutch, because it's more than like the Swedish or even the British. I see this situation more comparable to the Dutch royal family, where Queen Beatrix, before her grandchildren were born, she decreed that the younger ones will just have the titles of Count and Countess, which Queen Margrethe has said for her grandchildren as well. So that is more comparable, because in Sweden, they removed the his and her royal highnesses.
Oh, and I see.
So that isn't necessarily going to be as comparable as the Dutch situation, which I think makes more relevance with this.
Yeah, but as I say, we could do a whole episode on it. It'd be very interesting just to see how the monarchy, you know, this is just another stage of its evolution. And it would be, you know, very interesting to cover that one.
I don't know if you've seen this video that's been posted on Twitter recently. Last night, there was the Danish kind of crown prince couple. They have this award ceremony. And at that, they had a comedian who was joking about what it means to be a royal court supplier and how you have to deliver to them several times to be able to carry the title of court supplier. And his joke was that the Crown Princess Mary was only recognized as the court supplier after she gave birth to the twins, because she'd done it 4 times. So
maybe that's funnier in Danish.
Very much, yeah.
kind of falls flat in English.
Definitely, yeah. So I think there's definitely this like trend. And talking about Crown Princess Mary, she's also stated that her children might kind of have their titles removed at some point as well. So we're seeing like this trend in general, and in Denmark it was a bit more stark, as we'll talk about in that future episode, that there was backlash from the other end, where her grandchildren and her son and his current and former wife were not happy, and it was just a war of different briefings.
Yeah, that wasn't handled very well, was it?
Definitely. I think it was quite undignified, but I think Queen Margrethe stuck to her decision. And what public opinion polls showed is that the Danish people agreed with her decision.
Yeah, and that's, you know, at the end of the
That's
day,
definitely.
that's what matters, like it or not.
And so from there on, we're going to move into kind of discussing. We've already talked about the crown, and then there's lots of other exciting role news coming up in the next few weeks and then next year as well. So there's a few state visits this month. There's the Italian state visit to the Netherlands, which is going to be, I think, the sixth state visit this year for the Dutch royal family. So they've been quite busy.
Definitely, we all know Queen Maxima loves to dress up, so that's just another excuse to see those tiaras.
I know, yeah, I'm quite excited for that. And afterwards, we have the Swedish state visit to Jordan, which, I mean, in the past, it would have promised us tiaras, but I kind of doubt. If it was Queen Maxima going to Jordan, I would have been sure there would be tiaras present. It's Queen Sylvia, so I'm not too sure, because I
I
don't know if you
mean, I.
remember, but in 2019, the Swedish couple, they went to India and they went to Ireland, which is the same year the Dutch royal couple went to India and Ireland. But Queen Sylvia did not wear tiaras at banquets, but Queen Maxima wore tiaras at both banquets.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, she could always go for one. I mean, she's got an enormous collection of tiaras, but she could always go for a smaller one if she didn't want to, you know, appear too grandiose, especially in a country like Jordan. But then
And with
the
Queen Rania
Jordanians,
only having like one bracelet thing, so.
yeah, I mean, all of Queen Rania's tiaras are either borrowed or, yeah, like you say, the bracelet one.
Which is sadly disaster. And did you hear about kind of one other developments in the past 2 years has been the divorce of her sister-in-law, Princess Haya, from the Sheikh of Dubai.
Oh, yeah.
And she left her jewels in Dubai and got some compensation for them, but it means that her spectacular Cartier tiara from her mother is probably lost forever now.
Oh, really? Because that's the only tiara I can think of Queen Rania wearing.
Yes, and that was just spectacular, but I mean, sadly gone now.
Oh, well, I'm sure all those billions will make up for it if she ever
Oh,
sees
definitely.
them.
Yeah. I mean, Queen Rania's mother-in-law has at least three tiaras.
I
So,
always
but
find it
she will have more
hilarious
than
that
from her.
King Abdullah's mother is like called Tony and she's from Sussex.
It's the most random thing. I was reading the autobiography of Princess Alice, Duchess of Gloucester, a few years ago. And she talked about it going on a visit to Jordan right after Tony had gotten married. And they didn't plan to like take any like grand stuff because they were hosting a dinner at the British Embassy. But she was like, I didn't have a gown or anything. But then she met Tony, and Tony said, oh, what are you wearing? I'm going to be wearing my wedding dress and my biggest tiara tonight. And then Princess Alice, who luckily had a tiara and a gown packed for a different event during that visit on that long tour, I think they were off to Jerusalem afterwards. And she decided, okay, well, we have to take those out and wear them now because otherwise it'll be some sort of diplomatic incident.
Yeah, but why aren't you dressed up?
Like, why aren't you? And she was wearing her full-on wedding dress with her biggest tiara.
Oh,
So
wow. Oh, well.
I really want to see a picture of that because that incident sounded really funny, but I haven't seen any pictures yet.
Oh, I'm sure we could track them down, or maybe, you know, if some of our listeners know of any pictures, that would be great.
Please send them our way.
Please do.
And after that, we have probably the big event that everyone's looking forward to is the South African state visit to Britain, which is going to be the first state visit of King Charles's reign.
Yes. Let's hope they break out some tiaras.
And I find the choice of South Africa really interesting because, yes, I know it was kind of scheduled before the Queen passed away, but when the Queen ascended to the throne in 1952, her first state visits were actually all mostly from other monarchies and close countries. Like, I think it was Sweden first, and then it was Ethiopia and a lot of like the close European countries. So I find it interesting that they're not necessarily following that pattern nowadays.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to go forward to see what road King Charles goes down.
Yeah, because there's kind of a lot of diplomatic bait in kind of state visits and first tours and stuff, which is, I think, why I believe I was seeing stuff about the UK Foreign Office that they don't want him to go to COP27 because that, and then his like first visit would lose that diplomatic weight.
Yeah, but there's also, I mean, that's another thing we can talk about is the ch you know the changing role of monarchy. You know, when he was Prince Charles, did say that obviously he wouldn't meddle as a monarch, which has been a worry for the Foreign Office, for Buckingham Palace. So as much as he didn't meddle, but he did insist on hosting a bank. It wasn't a banquet. What was it? Just
Just a reception.
a reception for the. For the event, and all of a sudden Rishi Sunak changed his mind and decided to go to the event when he wasn't going to go in the first place. So that's very that's an interesting development.
That's a display of that soft power the monarchy has.
Yes, very much so. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he displays that going forward.
Regarding the jewels at the state banquet, what are your kind of thoughts? Do you think that the royal family will stick to kind of their usual jewels that they've been wearing and then kind of bring out the new stuff after the coronation? Or do you think they're just gonna start this new reign on a nice foot?
I think they're definitely going to bring out the new stuff. You know, there's as much as we're still calling her Queen Consort Camilla, it won't be long
Which
before we're calling
I've
her.
actually noticed has been kind of phasing out for the past couple of days. Like I've noticed a lot more Queen Camilla than Queen Consort.
Yeah, we're just lazy. We can't be bothered with that extra word.
Yeah.
No, so this is it. If she's now going to be Queen Camilla, then she's going to wear the Queen's jewels. So I wouldn't be surprised if she wears the Vladimir with the Delhi Durbar necklace and the Cambridge Emerald drops. I think Catherine, the Princess of Wales, I can't see her wearing anything different. I think the lover's knot tiara is hers.
And it is pretty big
It's pretty
and
big. I don't
slender
think
and
you could
dark.
top that without going into the jewels that the Queen wore. So
Yeah.
unless maybe
I
she.
think for the Princess of Wales, I'd like her to wear the Girls of Great Britain and Ireland tiara, but I think I would more like to see that at the coronation and not before that.
I would be very surprised if we see that tiara during this reign, just because it was so iconic to Queen Elizabeth II, just in the fact that it was. You know, it was on the banknotes, it was on the stamps. It's a very, that
It's an
tiara.
iconic piece,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's synonymous with Queen Elizabeth. So I don't think we'll see it this reign, but I could be proved wrong. I was just thinking maybe Catherine might wear the Greville tiara, but then I
Well,
thought
that
that's
would
actually
be interesting.
that would be interesting, but it's no slight on her. I don't think she's got the head for it.
Yeah, I think it suits Queen Camilla a lot more. She has the hair for it, and she has this like gravitas where she can carry off the big jewels.
Yeah.
With Catherine, like
She's
at
not there
times,
yet.
I'm tired of seeing the lover's knot tiara, but even at times, it looks a bit too big for her.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. And it'll also be interesting to see, what other members of the royal family will now be involved in these state events. Now, will it be Princess Anne? Will Sophie be taking more of a role?
Yeah. I'm excited to see who attends the Guildhall banquet because. That is like the second tiara occasion. It's usually been the Gloucesters, but they've been taking kind of a more back role these days. So it'll be interesting. And in the past, it was usually the Gloucester or the Duke of York. So I think one of them is certainly out, and then the other
Yeah.
ones are, yeah.
Well, this is it. As much as you want to slim down the monarchy and everything, your patrons of all these charities, all these events want you there. It's, you can't spread yourself that thin.
Definitely, yeah, and because so much of the royal family is already so senior, it'll be interesting to see kind of who attends.
Yeah.
And then from that will be one big event, but then an equally as exciting event, I think, for me would be the diplomatic reception at Buckingham Palace next month, which we were supposed to get earlier this year at Windsor, but then the war in Ukraine happened and it got delayed slash canceled. Never found out what happened to that, but. I think the diplomatic reception is kind of an even bigger deal than the state visit because it's kind of the biggest gathering of the year.
It is, yes. And again, it will be interesting, like we said, with the South African visit, if they'll break out the new jewels, or maybe we'll see something historic from the vaults that we haven't seen in a number of years. I mean, there was a rumor going around on Instagram that we're hoping to see Kate in Maria Fjodorovna's Sapphire Bandel. Because
That
we just
was interesting.
don't see her in many colored stones.
Yeah, I think with if they are tending to avoid kind of jewels associated with the late queen, for Queen Camilla, I could see her wearing the Oriental circlet and making that into kind of her own jewel, like the Queen Mother did.
Yeah, maybe she might put the opals back into it.
Oh, I do hope not. I like the rubies.
Oh, I don't mind an opal.
Not a fan of opals. Yeah. But that necklace that goes with it is absolutely spectacular.
It is, yes, actually. They don't own many rubies, but the ones they do have, they're pretty good.
I know the Burmese ruby tiara is a bit controversial, but I rather like it.
No, don't like it.
Don't. It
No.
has like it's better than the aquamarines or
Yeah,
even
both of them.
sapphire.
Don't like them. Don't like any of them.
I didn't like them for the longest time, but I started to appreciate them, the rubies, a lot more these days.
You're like you might have to persuade me on those ones.
Yeah. Let's see. I think it, on another wearer, it might be better than they have been on the queen.
Possibly.
Let's see.
Let's see.
Yeah. And then also in December, we are going to have the Nobel Prize ceremony and the banquet the following day for the king's. Like dinner for Nobel laureate. So that's another two tiara occasions to look forward to.
That is, and I always find that Queen Sylvia does bring out the good stuff when it comes to the Nobel Prize ceremony. So that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I think she alternates between the sapphires and the nine prong tiara, and it was the nine prong last time. So she should be
Yeah.
the sapphires this time, and I really do love those sapphires.
Oh, I love them. That's going to be one of my next articles on my blog. I've had it sitting in the drafts for ages, and I must finish it.
I'm saving that one for Queen Sylvia's, I think it's 80th birthday next year. So I want to do that for like the big occasion. So
Yeah.
I'm holding off, but I have found lots of wonderful pictures of that. So I might
Yeah.
share those with.
And I'm trying to get the Swedish Royal Jewels documentary translated just to get some subtitles in. I'll do it. I will do
Yeah, it used to be so nice in the past, but now I don't know what's happened to the
to the
technology.
subtitles, but hey, you know.
And now, as we look for another thing, like moving on, next year, the big event is the coronation of King Charles.
Oh, that's, you know, the other events are going to pale in comparison to that event.
Oh, yeah, I think the coronation is possibly going to be like the Queen's coronation was the biggest event of the century, last century. I think not even the coronations of her father or grandfather or even great grandfather kind of compared in comparison because of just the amount of the aristocracy and all the foreign guests and everything. It was just like this huge display of splendor.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be amazing, really. And I am very, very keen to see what traditions they are going to preserve and what they're going to change. But I do really hope the aristocracy wear all their tiaras. And I really hope all the royal ladies just go, like, you know, go into that vault, find the biggest, bestest jewels that they can and just throw them on just for the day. I mean, I know the
Oh yeah.
optics won't look fantastic, but just for the day.
I want all of them, like the Duchess of Gloucester's, all her daughter-in-law and her daughters to all wear tiaras, the Kents as well. And like a whole lot should be decked out in jewels. Like if they don't have them, borrow them.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's enough jewelers in Bond Street that would more than be happy to lend them to.
Yeah. Same with the aristocracy, because a lot of them have sold their jewels. And I think, in a sense, there should be a bit of a ballot system where, because there is a bit of limited space, they won't create all those huge stands again. But I think it'd be really interesting to see kind of which, at least upper, like the dukes and stuff, should all be in attendance or the ones that
Yes.
want to.
Yes, that would be very interesting. And also, you know, you have to remember a lot of the dukedoms went defunct since the last coronation.
Yes, quite a few have.
So, yeah, it will be very
I think
interesting.
I really want to see the coronation robes brought back again, the peer and peeress robes, because like why have they been holding on to them all this time? They're not going to use them.
Oh my
And the
God, could you
current
imagine
outfit.
getting those dry cleaned?
Like I've seen all those ads from the 50s and stuff of people making like a return to like in the 50s that they were creating new tiaras, new robes, new gowns. So it really like brought back this whole industry. So I think we could do that. And then in today's day and age, do it like without the ermine and stuff and make it fake.
Yeah, that would be interesting, especially given, you know, King Charles and Prince William's dedication to the environment and wildlife conservatism. That would be very interesting.
Yeah. And I think the coronation and what that we'll also talk about that later, but like looking forward to the foreign royal guests and everything. And in addition to that, that is one big event, but we're also going to get the Golden Jubilee of King Carl Gustaf of Sweden, yeah, which is also going to bring together lots of royals from around Europe. Hopefully not just Scandinavians this time, from other countries as well.
I hope so, because, you know, as much as, you know, the Scandinavians, they are very closely related to each other, but they do, like you say, they do sort of tend to stick to their own. And I mean, we're just as bad. We only send Prince Edward and Countess Sophie to these events. So maybe moving forward, it could be a bit more inclusive.
I do hope so. I want to see the Prince and Princess of Wales go to big royal events.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, and then we also have the wedding of Princess Theodora of Greece, which should be another big royal event, and also the 18th birthday of Prince Christian of Denmark.
Yeah, and also Princess Leonora of Spain, and that I think would be a very interesting one, because as tradition goes, it's usually the 18th birthday is when princesses get their first tiaras.
Yeah, so we'll start seeing her at events. I mean, the Spanish need all the help they can get at this stage. So not just like at banquets, but like at the military reception that they have, the New Year's reception and the diplomatic reception. So let's do that.
Yeah, they do. Unfortunately, again, they if you think the British PR is bad, you want to see the Spanish. They are, they're holding on by their fingertips, bless them.
Very much. Queen Letizia is doing a good job there.
Yeah, we can get into that.
I think let's stop the recording right now. And I think now that leads us to kind of a good look at what has happened in the past year and what we can look forward to for the next few weeks and in coming episodes. First of all, I'd like to thank Sam for joining us on the podcast. And I'm sure that we all look forward to kind of having more fun conversations in the next few months.
Definitely. Can't wait.
So you can find us, me on The Royal Watcher and as The Royal Watcher on Instagram and Twitter. Where can we find you, Sam?
So the blog is thebeaumonde.org. I will actually spell it out for people because a lot of people go, the what? And it's I will probably have to leave a link in the descriptions because all of my handles are different.
No, that's all right. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening, and we look forward to talking to you guys soon.